Welcome to the podcast ABCs of Parenting Adult Children. Please join.
Hello and welcome to ABCs of Parenting Adult Children podcast. This is going to be episode 16. Today's special guest speaker is Steve Knapp with Through the Glass Recovery. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great today, James. How are you?
Oh, I'm alive and kicking. Every time I wake up in the morning, I get excited about it.
Yep, me too. Me too.
So, my last podcast episode was titled Children and Divorce. So I went into different aspects of, you know, anytime a couple gets a divorce, children are the ones that suffer, you know, ultimately. They're the ones that are affected the most. And so I, way back when, during my first mistake, I got married, and my wife and I were in our early 20s. And In retrospect, we probably never should have gotten married. We were too immature. We didn't know how to handle our money. My in-laws had their noses stuck in our relationship in places that didn't belong, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, my son, Jeremy, who's now 38, 39 years old, he was the one positive thing that came out of that relationship. And so, from a father's perspective, I know how difficult, divorce is. And, I know how, all the range of emotions that you go through and all of that. So, I want to, talk to you, you know, and our talking points are children and divorce from a father's perspective, addiction recovery in children, and how does it affect them overall? So I guess having said all of that, I'm going to kind of give you the floor and let you introduce yourself and introduce the program that you're with and all of that.
So I'm Steve Knapp. I co-founder of Through the Glass Recovery and Recovery Podcast. So we have our own recovery podcast. It's an alcohol addiction podcast. Myself and Julie, who's been on here, we founded it to create an environment that was really, really good for us and our growth in recovery. And it's just kind of blossomed, and we've both turned into recovery coaches to help out other people who were going through the same things that we were going through, trying to, you know, kick the alcohol addiction and try and grow through it and, you know, find ourselves and, you know, become emotionally healthy people.
Right.
And so so to talk about
where were you at with regards to your divorce? Was this right after the divorce happened?
Yeah,
already
so,
happened.
So when it came, I was just over a year sober when I decided that our relationship was going to end. I decided that we were going to go down the path of divorce.
Okay.
So I had been sober for 14, 15 months. And I moved out about a month later after I made that decision. And then, so that's kind of where everything gets difficult. But I think no matter what, you know, the first topic that you're talking about was, you know, father's perspective and children and divorce. No matter what, I think, like, my kids were 5 and 7 years old. So they were young, two young girls. And so I think no matter what, it's hard on the kids, whether you're divorced or not.
Sure.
Right. Not divorced, I'm modeling a really unhealthy relationship because myself and my ex-wife, we're not, you know, communicating properly. We're arguing, we're separate. You could visibly see, and the kids could visibly see that we weren't in a loving relationship anymore.
Sure.
So, like, we were separated. I was living upstairs. She was living downstairs. We basically started living separate lives and with the kids in the middle of the whole thing.
Right.
So, I mean, before the divorce, I think it was hard on the kids. And I could see that it was hard on the kids. The kids were more emotional.
Right.
The kids, it was harder for them to deal with life as it was being thrown at them, because neither of us, even though we were trying to be present for the kids, like, we're already emotionally, our emotional tank is already empty. So right. I know I was short with the kids. I know she was short with the kids. It just gets really hard. So, I think divorce, like addiction, happens long before you actually realize what the problem is.
Right.
Right. The wedge in the relationship starts to separate. And as the wedge in that relationship gets wider and wider, the kids become more and more affected by the wedge. I mean, in the end, choosing to walk away is really, really hard. It was,
sure.
You feel guilty for almost like abandoning your children, but at the same time, you know that that's something you need to do.
How long were y'all married?
12 years.
Oh, wow.
So
that's a good amount of time.
Yeah. And like, we spent some years, and that's probably one of those things. I think, you know, at the time it was good and things were well. And I don't think we grew together. I think we grew apart, as time went on.
Right.
Also, as time went on, like, a good chunk of my 30s, I drank a lot. So a lot of that, I would say, is my fault for being in active addiction and not being emotionally available and not trying to work through things and avoiding life.
So you were kind of self-medicating to help work through all of the emotional garbage you were going through?
Yeah, I wasn't good at conflict. I wasn't good at speaking my mind. I thought that if I said yes to everything, that made me a good husband.
Right.
So I was very much a yes man. Like, go ahead and do whatever you want. I'll bend over backwards and do all of the things that are necessary, because I thought that's what a good husband and a good father was.
Right.
So that's what I did. And in the end, all I did was abandon myself in the process of that. And in losing myself, the way I found to cope with all of that was drinking.
Gotcha.
And it got worse and worse and worse as time went on.
And it just made things worse instead of better.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. Drinking doesn't make anything any better. It's instant relief, but it doesn't fix anything.
Like, sure.
Actually, facing life and dealing with the problem and facing myself is what fixes it.
Just a temporary Band-Aid.
It's just a temporary Band-Aid for sure.
Right.
So addiction recovery and kids, like, how does it affect them overall? So I quit, and then I started going to meetings. And for me, like, when I was in active addiction, all of that hurts the kids. I'm super short. I'm not emotionally available. It's really hard to actually be there and be present and not, you know, the kids are having a tantrum. They always have tantrums, and not try and get them to turn it off, because I'm uncomfortable in their, like, I'm almost taking their tantrums and stuff personally when it's not about me at all.
Right.
And then I'm trying to get them to turn that off, and then I get upset, and then they get upset, and all I'm doing is fueling the fire. I'm not really helping them resolve their own issues, because I didn't know how to do that myself.
Sure.
when I started learning how to do that myself, I started being able to show up in a really healthy way for my kids. Even though I'm separated now from my wife, when the other day when my daughter, she was doing a cartwheel and she smacked her heel on the handle of the door, and she's sitting there crying, like, it's okay now. I don't need to try and make it better for her so I can stop her crying. I just need to be there. That's what, like, the version of showing up I had before, right? Like, give her something to make her stop crying, trying to make her smile, trying to make her laugh or whatever, instead of just letting her feel the pain.
Right.
Right? Letting that happen and then seeing her through it.
Right.
And so I was able to sit there with her, ask her how she's doing. Is there anything I can do to help? And she's 8, right? So she has an idea. Sure. She can communicate.
Sure.
And I could just be there. And all she wanted was a hug. I can do that.
Right.
I'm capable of that. I don't have to fix it. She's not bleeding. Right. She's not, there's nothing, you know, extreme. So it was cool that after all of that happened, and still I'm almost 3 years sober now. I'll be 3 years sober in the middle of March. And still to this day, pardon me?
Congratulations.
Thank you. And still to this day, like, I get kind of impressed with myself that, because I know what I used to be like. I know how I used to solve problems. Like, when I was drinking and I hurt the kids or made them cry or whatever, I would make them their favorite meal to try and make up for it. Or I would do all of these other things to try and make them smile or you know, and it's a different kind of action. And I think the healthy way now in my perspective is to actually show up emotionally, because that's, I think, where they need me to show
right.
up.
Right. You brought up a key point earlier when you talked about fixing things.
Mm-hmm.
Fathers and men in general, we're kind of hardwired. Typically, maybe all men are not this way. I don't want to paint a broad picture here, but I think a lot of men, and I mean personally, and you mentioned it, as men, we are wired to identify a problem and then fix it. You know, I want to fix this problem, whether it's my children, whether it's my wife or my girlfriend. You know, my wife and I have been married. We're going on 34 years now. And there's awesome. Been several times where I was right in the middle of, we'll be discussing something, or my wife, she's a teacher, she'll be talking about this, that, or another, and I'll be sitting there analyzing it and trying to figure out a solution. And she's like, hey, I don't expect you to fix this.
Yeah.
She says, this is just what I'm walking through. This is what I'm dealing with. And I need to work through this in my way and come to the natural conclusion of whatever it is she's going to come to. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. And, you know, and then you're sitting there going, well, I don't know what else to do. I just want to fix your problem, you know? And
yep. Natural fixer.
And we have this inert desire to keep our spouses and our loved ones from experiencing pain, right?
Pain. Yep.
And discomfort. And, you know, as parents, we want our children to have a better life than what we had.
Yep.
We want our children to have a better childhood than we had, right? Mm-hmm. I had a horrible childhood. Me and my adopted sister had a horrible childhood. My parents are, you know, long gone from this world, and they, you know, we were both adopted from an orphanage in Germany. It brought us to the U.S. We got medical care that we never would have gotten had we been in, just stayed in that orphanage in Germany. And so I'm so very thankful that for the positive things and the great things that they did for my sister and I, but they had no clue how to demonstrate love towards their children. Right.
Right.
So I had children of my own. And how do you parent your children? You parent your children like you were parented, because that's just natural. That's the only way you know
Yep.
It's just inherent. It's inherited behavior, right? And I knew when I knew that I had two abusive parents, and I knew that I needed to get help, and that I had. Yeah, I knew how to pay bills. I knew how to put food on the table. I knew how to give them clothes. I knew how to give them stuff. But I didn't know how to be emotionally available to them and to demonstrate a fatherly love to them that they desperately needed. All our children need healthy, emotionally healthy and present fathers in the home that can provide them with that portion of the parental unit, right?
Yeah.
All our kids need moms. All our kids need dads. They need grandparents. What's the saying? It takes a village sometimes,
Yeah, absolutely does
sometimes
too.
It takes people in the church, Sunday school teachers, school counselors, everything that we can give our children. I mean, they are our most important resource, right? And so
yep.
anything and everything with right balance, with the right boundaries, we need to provide our kids so they can have a good, healthy life, and go through the stages of childhood that they go through. And in so many instances, when we have emotional garbage or we have addictions or we have whatever it is that we are dealing with, we bring that in, we bring all that garbage into the
yeah.
child's world, and
mm-hmm.
God forbid, they don't deserve that. They don't need that. And so as parents, it's our responsibility to get healing ourselves as much as possible so that we can become whole. We can be a mature, intelligent, emotionally intelligent and,
yep.
and psychologically intelligent person for them, right? And that's what our children need. And I told you about our parents, our Facebook group. We have over 1,000 members that parents that are struggling with relationships with their older children, teenagers, and adult children, right? And there's
yeah.
like three major groups of children. And when I started this podcast and I was starting to develop topics for the podcast, I was like, well, we need to talk about marriage. My first or second podcast episode was about what is marriage? What is a healthy marriage? What's required to have a healthy marriage, and all of the things that come together, and so it's very important that as parents that we relationally have our act together, right? And because raising children is probably one of the toughest things that we'll ever face. Right.
There's no book for that. I don't
no,
care how many
there's
years.
No,
there's
no book
no,
for it.
no.
So I wound up using, I started listening to, what was his name? Oh my God. Christian psychologist. I want to say, oh Lord, James Robertson. Anyway, I'll remember his name here in a second, but I started listening to his radio programs and, his Bible studies. And I don't think back in the mid 90s, I don't think there was even such a thing as podcasts. Maybe there was. I don't know. I don't know when podcasting and YouTube and all that came to be, but
right.
I think it was radio and internet or whatever, So
yeah.
I started listening. James Dobson, that's his name. James Dobson. I don't think he's with us anymore, but he's a, really solid Christian counselor and psychologist, and I don't remember what the name of his show was, but I listened to it, and so I used a lot of that information that I got from him to kind of deprogram all the crap that I had in my head, right?
Yeah, I mean, you call that deprogram, and that's absolutely like when I use the same words, I call it like limiting beliefs, right? I'm starting to realize now, and I have been lately too, is that a lot of how I see things, it was given to me.
Right.
Right.
Your world.
And then Yeah, it was given to me, and sure. I accepted it as that part of my reality. So this is the way I must do things. And I, if you don't see another way or try to look for another way, I'm never going to find it. I'm only going to react in a way in which I'm comfortable reacting the way I know how. And so if I don't look outside of that box, and my box was really small, if I don't look outside of that box and see what's on the other side of it, I'm never going to try something new. I'm never going to attempt to be more present. I'm never going to attempt to accept things that I really wasn't even prepared to accept before,
right.
because I didn't even know they existed. A lot of the things are just automatic. And so, like, now, 3 years into this, my ex, not 3 years into, a year, almost 2 years into the divorce now, my ex has a boyfriend. He's over a lot. I have the kids every other weekend.
Right.
And he is more of the main father figure. I'm still daddy, but he
sure.
is more of the main father figure. And part of divorce means other people enter our lives. Right. And then figuring out how to be emotionally healthy when those other people enter those lives and not hold any resentment toward her and him and their relationship. And I'm and I look at it like, are my kids happy? When I see my kids, are my kids happy with, do I hear, essentially the way I look at it is, do I hear them complain about him?
Right.
They don't say anything. He's great when I see, when I've seen them with him, with my kids. I am happy that they have someone there, a male figure that's reliable, that'll smile, that'll treat them with love and compassion, and show up for them when I can't. And that's not the easiest thing to do, because I'm their father.
Sure.
Right. But at the same time, if I'm going to try and model a healthy relationship, I'm going to show up and talk to him man to man. I'm going to treat him with respect. I'm going to treat my ex-wife
sure.
with respect. And
sure.
I can see now that she is better off without me in her life, and that I'm better off without her in her life the way we were.
Sure.
And I think, even though it's hard for the kids, and I still have things that I need to improve on, but even though it's still hard for the kids, and I know it is, and there's some shame, right? I have a lot of shame. Like, there's a good chunk of, they were 3 and 5 years old when I finally quit. And so I missed, even though I was there, I missed a good chunk of the beginning of both of their children's, both of my kids' lives.
Right.
I remember some of the moments, but I was like really heavy in my addiction then when they showed up in this world. And so, some of the challenges now are the shame, leaving the wife and kids. Financially, when you get divorced and separate, that throws all of that out of whack. So there's a level of stress that comes with that. And I consider myself really lucky, because our divorce didn't go through courts. It didn't go through any of that. We sat down at mediation. We put the kids first, and we mediated our separation agreement in 4 hours.
That's excellent.
Which, I mean, because it was all about the kids.
Sure.
And it wasn't about us. And we tried to,
right.
Even though divorce is, you can take things personally really quickly. We managed to work through that pretty well, as a pair of people trying to figure out what their life was going to look like outside of being together.
Gotcha.
And I think the other hardest part is it's time away from the kids. You don't get to spend the time with them. I mean,
that's tough.
It's tough trying to figure out what that balance looks like and how to, you know, like, I live an hour and a half away from them, so I know I miss events and I miss the things that they're doing, and I miss chunks of their lives. And I think I just try and make the best of when we're together.
Right.
And try and give them some of the things that I feel is important, because we both have two very different parenting styles.
Right.
And it's hard to sit down and have a discussion. And it's like, you go ahead and parent the kids the way you feel like you need to parent them when you have them. And as long as there's some meshing there in values, then as long as I have the kids and it doesn't interfere too much with that, we should both be kosher together. It should be able to figure things out, because we can't control what each other is going to do.
Sure.
And so there's that interesting kind of the mending of the melding of two different parenting styles it's got its own interesting dynamic.
Yeah, that can be complicated at best. One of the things you're talking about is a blended family. You know, mm-hmm. you've got you, the father, your wife, the mother, and then you've got a another man that's entered into the male figure that's entered mm-hmm. into the equation.
Who has four kids himself too.
Sure.
He's got
okay.
his own family. Yep.
Yeah. So you have a blended family, and so there's a dynamic there that's not typically there. That's not natural mm-hmm. for it to be there. And so I guess our job as parents is to negotiate the complexities of having a blended family, and you know, you don't need to be talking smack about her. She doesn't need to be talking smack about you. You know, our children learn about relationship dynamics through watching us.
Right.
We're like, we're on the stage and at all times. And it's like God watches us all the time, right? I mean, I try not to bring, I'm not trying to be super spiritual or anything like that, but if you have faith in a God or whoever mm-hmm. your higher power is, he sees everything we do, right? He, she, it, whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. Our higher power knows what we're thinking. He knows our emotions. And I think parenting is kind of the same dynamic in that, you know, our kids, you know, they see us when we're happy. They see us when we're sad. We see it. Mm-hmm. They see us when we're content. You know, and it's like I said, they learn how to navigate relationship conflicts. They learn their conflict resolution skills. They learn all of that through us. And
yeah.
And when you're in the middle of a heated relationship battle, you know, as you're going through a separation or divorce, you're focusing on your feelings. You're focusing on your rights. Mm-hmm. As a person, as an individual, as a husband, as a wife. And so you're like you said, you're in this little box and you're just looking around at this inside of this box going, well, I've got all these issues and I'm pissed off or I'm upset, or, you know, you go through this whole range of emotions. And then at some point you think about the kids and you go, wait, this is not about me. It's about them. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's good that you and your, significant other were able to put the children and their needs at the forefront of working out the dynamics of what life was going to look like after it was all said and done, right? And so
yeah.
I think a lot of couples miss that, you know, and sometimes there's just nothing but destruction in the family. It's like a tornado went through and just ripped up the yeah. house by the roots. And there's crap all over the yard. The children are wherever the children, they're up in the trees.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, you know. And so, you know, and when you, if you were a if you were a child of a divorce, my parents went through a rough patch. And I remember, you know, my dad was an alcoholic, and he drank all the time, and he got even, you know, he was more of an asshole than he was when he was sober, right? And
yep.
So I remember how frightened we were as children, and how we stayed in our rooms and didn't bother him, we didn't talk to him, we tried to stay off his radar as much as possible. And so, I mean, I understand, you know, what it is to to be a child in a family dynamic that is got lots and lots of stress and anger and bitterness and yelling, yep, and screaming and throwing physical things. And my dad never hit my mother,
yep,
that I know of. I know he came really close to doing that. So yeah, it's ugly. It can get ugly.
Yeah. And I wasn't an angry drunk. I shut down. I just everything turned off.
Gotcha.
For the most part. So I there was never any screaming or anything like that. It was just all shoved under the rug, right? No processing of things. Just ignore it, essentially. Gotcha. Is where I was at. So
it'll go away, or it'll get better on its own.
Yeah, and it was just like it was sitting a lot of sitting in silence. It's because I didn't know how to express myself properly either.
Right.
It just, nor did I have the courage or confidence to it. But I mean, in active addiction, I didn't have any of that, or, you know, I wasn't trying to figure out how to do any better for myself. I didn't even know until I quit and then woke up, and I was like, okay, I need to start working on myself and figuring out myself. And in the end, that kind of working on myself allowed me to be as present and understand, like, just gain so much more emotional intelligence and figure out what's going on, what
right,
I'm feeling, allowing myself to actually feel that and process. I've now cried in front of my children, and I realized that that's okay.
Sure.
I don't have to hide it. And the kids can be like, what's wrong, daddy? I'm sad right now. And because I'm sad, I'm crying. And like, none of that was ever modeled for me.
Right. No, Lord, no. Men don't cry. If you're a real man, you don't cry.
Right.
You suck it up and pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and, you know, and you deal with it. Whatever it is, you just deal with it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. So learning that and then modeling that for them, like, it's okay to cry. It's okay to be sad. You don't have to put it away, but we got to move through it too.
Sure.
And I think that's the important part. Like, you don't need to hold on to it. And I used to be really good at holding on to stuff, hold on to it for dear life, because that's all I knew. And then change that around. It's like, okay, I can process, I can feel it, and I can let it go, understand where it come from, and
right,
then move on and show that, and
right,
have that be okay. And so I, like, that's, you know, the other side of all of this is, we might be separated, but I think the kids are in a better place because both of us are in a better place.
Right.
And that's what matters, because if we're in a better place, then we can show up for the kids a lot better than we were before.
Right. That's good.
So, I mean, it's not an easy road to travel, but when the dynamic hurts the kids and both parents aren't willing to try and be on the same page anymore, I think your options are pretty limited. And I,
right.
So, yeah.
So, for parents that are listening, whether they be still married and in the middle of a battle or whatever, or they're going through a horrible divorce, I mean, from a father's perspective, mean, I've listened to your story, and I can hear, you came to a realization that things were not working out. You came to through the realization that, you know, medicating through alcohol wasn't, it was just providing a temporary relief for the mm-hmm. emotional anguish that you were in. And so what were some of the processes that you worked through to, you know, I mean, at some point there was an awakening in you and you realized, oh shit, something's horribly wrong here. And this is not getting any better continuing down this road. What was the turning point or the pivotal space or pivotal point in you that made you hop off of that destructive route and start to get help?
So I was really good at, we both had separate credit cards. So I was really good at buying all of my booze and all of the things I didn't want her to know about on my credit card. And then one day she found a credit card bill. And then that evening she approached me and asked me she asked me if I could explain what this was all about. And I think like that was the time where the lie got too heavy to carry. I was either going to basically have to throw a friend underneath the bus to save my own hide or to try and save my own hide. And that felt almost impossible to do.
Right.
So when that time came, I wasn't willing to throw him under the bus. So that means I had to stand in front of my problem. And that was the time I was like, okay, that's all me. And that was really hard to say. And there's so much shame in saying, like, I have a problem and I don't know what to do about it. Because as a man, and I think women probably feel the same way, like, saying, I don't know what to do about it and I don't know how to fix myself, being a natural fixer to begin with,
right,
and a natural helper to begin with, feels really, really horrible.
Right.
Right? There's no
sure.
path out. There's no direction. There's nothing there. So I'm left holding a bag of nothing.
Right.
So what does that look like? I have no idea. And so after that night, I embarked on a journey that I have no idea what I was getting myself into. I just knew I couldn't drink anymore.
Right.
So after that night, that was the night that turned everything around. I couldn't lie anymore. I realized that I had to tell the truth because lying was my way out of everything. It was my way out of not facing myself. It was a way out of not facing life. You know, create my own separate reality so I could deal with it. And I didn't realize the truth was that freeing. I was so scared of the truth. So once I realized that the truth held way more power than the lie did, I started relying on it instead of the other way around and just facing my problems, which is freaking hard.
Oh, yeah.
But
okay.
That was my turning point.
Good.
That's where everything started to change. And I went to AA for a little while, for just over a year. And then kind of through the meetings that I started going to, that they weren't related to any program whatsoever. This is what Julie and I do.
Sure.
It's not related to any program. It's people in recovery from alcohol addiction talking about life and sharing our own life experiences and then giving each other feedback and having that vulnerable conversation and working through our problems together.
Right.
Rather than alone in silence, because that never works. That never worked for me, let me tell you.
Right. So the good news for the audience and for people that are listening that may be going through something similar, there's hope. There's
there,
hope.
yeah, there is.
And that's one of the things that I want parents, moms, dads, uncles, aunts, whoever, whoever's in the family that needs help. once you get to that turning point, once you realize, oh shit, I've got a problem, you know, life is not over, you know. Life might be difficult and there may be a lot of damage behind you, but moving forward, there's hope, you know, and reaching out to people, reaching out to organizations such as AA, CA, NA, whatever your issue is, Overeaters Anonymous, whatever the problem is.
There is so many other options out there that aren't related to any recovery program. There's books, there's Quitlet, there's through any social media outlet that you look for, you can find, there's so many different ways.
Sure.
Like Julie and I have become recovery coaches, sober coaches. And that's one of those other avenues,
right,
where we can help people out that are looking for that help and
sure.
trying to figure out your own way. Cause I think that's important. There's no one way to do this. It's what's going to work for you and how is that going to work and how are you going to apply it? Because all of our experiences are different.
Sure.
And so finding your way out of that experience is going to be you finding your own way out of that experience. So providing the support in that fashion, I think it gives people back their own self-agency. I get to make my own decisions. I get
right.
to figure this out on my own based on how I feel about things. And I get to learn about myself at the same time. And I think that's life. And it's a beautiful way to do things.
Well, that's what I love about Through the Glass Recovery, that you guys are providing the hope that people need. You're providing a sounding board. You know, people can come into a safe environment where they're free to just be real, just be themselves, just talk about the garbage that's going on, and there's a no judgment zone, and you know, people can people need that. They need to know that they're loved. They need to know that they're you know, they need compassion, they need sympathy, they need empathy.
Yep.
They need people that are going to be real with them and help them to understand that, hey, your path is your own. And you are responsible for taking ownership of your garbage and fixing it and getting rid of it, you know, and that is not an instantaneous process. It takes time, you know, and
no.
So that's what I want our listening audience to understand is that, yeah, so we've made some mistakes in the past. Yeah, our personal lives or our family lives are in shambles, or, you know, that tornado has ripped through there and torn everything apart. And so what are we going to do about it? You know,
yeah,
it's not going to fix itself.
It's so easy to look at it and be like, wow, I'm such a failure. I failed at all of this stuff, but that doesn't mean if I don't do anything about it now, I can work my way out of all of that. It's never, and through my own experience, none of it has ever been as bad as I've perceived it to be.
Right.
None of it. None of the work is as bad as I make it out to be in my own mind.
Right.
So as hard as it feels and as hard as it sounds, it really, my mind has been my own worst enemy. That's for sure.
Sure. And we are our own worst judge. We
mm-hmm.
judge ourselves harsher than anybody else does, right?
Absolutely.
We love to beat ourselves up, and we love to play the blame game. And mm-hmm. oh, I'm just such an idiot, and this will never get fixed because of blah 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 blah. And the enemy just sits there and just talks garbage to you, and you buy into it. And you know, that's what you know. And I think that's part of recovery is that people need to hear that. No, you're not an idiot. No, there is hope, right? There is hope for you, and we're gonna take you by the hand and show you a different path and help you to make the right decisions, right? And sometimes I can't speak from a position of I've never, you know, probably the only thing I've ever been addicted to is probably food, right? Mm-hmm. I can talk from a food addiction standpoint, but mm-hmm. you know, I've never been where you're coming from, right? So I can't really talk to that. But I've, you know, dealt with other issues in my life that caused some collateral damage, right? And I've had to work through those things. And it's just so awesome that you have experienced that hope, that you've experienced putting things back together in your life and ultimately in your children's lives. Your children are in a better place than they were before.
Yep.
And together, all of you can work together to, as a blended family, to give those children the love and support that they desperately need. You know, it's a lot of hurting children in this world and a lot of hurting families. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they are in a bad place because of their parents being in a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
So anyway, I really appreciate you talking from the heart and sharing your thoughts and your feelings. And I know that talking about some of that stuff is not easy, you know, and I know it dredges up some of the past that's hurtful. And, you know, while I'm sorry that you had to go through that again, I really believe that you're being upfront and honest and real with me and with our listening audience. I think that's very powerful. And I think that there's going to be people that are going to listen to this, and they may not respond. They may not engage with the podcast. They may not email me or say anything to either one of us, but I feel positive that they'll find the hope and the direction they need to come to that turning point in their lives, to where they can get help. They can reach out. They can call 211 for their community where they live in and touch those resources, and or get on, you know, get online. Like you said, there's tons and tons of resources online.
There's tons and tons. Anybody's welcome to reach out to either myself or Julie, and they don't have to come to the free meeting that we have on Monday nights that her and I host on. I'll just throw this out there. Her and I host a recovery meeting every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, and it's free and it's on Zoom. You do it from the comfort of your own home. But if that's not something for you, I take no offense to that, but I would love to even help give someone some direction.
It can be a starting point.
Right. Her and I would just love to help someone, point them in the right direction. How do I get help? What does that look like for you? That's what I love doing, to be honest with you.
How would they find you if they're on their computer? How would they get to the Looking Glass?
Yeah, you can. So we're through the, to find us, you can go to www.throughtheglassrecovery.com.
All right, let me put that up on the screen. You'll see. Share screen. Hold on. Let's do this. Do you see my screen?
Yeah, I do.
All right, here we go. So it's through the what?
Through the glass recovery.
Oh, there it is. There we go. So Through the Glass Recovery podcast. Well, I'm not
seeing it on the screen though.
You're not?
Hold on.
Did I move it away? You see it now?
There you go. If you make that bigger.
Okay.
There you go. Right. Yeah.
So here's the online Zoom meeting facts.
Yep. There's the FAQs that explains a little bit about what we do. We have our own podcast, and we're both recovery coaches, and you can see at the top of that screen there where there's some links, and you can check us out, and we're more than willing to help out anyone who's interested.
So you click on start here, recovery your way.
Yep. We release a podcast episode once every week. It comes out every Monday.
So they can click on that and listen to it. And then if they decide that's something that's going to help them.
Yeah. We also have a newsletter. So every Monday we release a new email that has our meeting topic, and it's got some journal questions, and Julie writes a blog, and that she puts that on there. So you have access to all of that. Sometimes we add a little free resource, a tidbit, a worksheet, you know, list of coping skills or stuff like that. So, I mean, we try to add as much value as we possibly can. And as her and I are learning and growing, we try and give that to our listeners too.
I got you. All right. I think I'm running out of time here. So
Sounds good.
I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. I appreciate you showing up and spending some time with me this morning. And I want to thank my listening audience for listening to today's episode. You can listen to this podcast on Spotify, Amazon Radio. I'm sorry, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Apple, and Public Radio. You can contact us.
Please tune in next week for another episode of our podcast on parenting adult children.
Please share our podcast with your friends, family, and coworkers. And have a blessed day.